Hello, I'm Niall Kahn, and this is the P-Pro Podcast. The way the payments industry frames the future of payments is cashless. Everyone will have their phone or implant of some kind to pay for goods without ever having to touch their wallets. But how we get from our current cash-based economy to a cashless one will have bumps and hiccups. Shifting how consumers transfer their goods to another won't change overnight. These problems are playing out right now across the globe as various countries begin to shift towards a cashless society. I'm pleased to be joined by Joyreen Thomas to discuss the promise and perils of the cashless society. Joyreen, welcome to the podcast and thanks very much for joining me.
Could you just tell me a little bit about yourself and your history within the e-commerce industry and payments industry?
I worked in payments for about 20 years now. I used to work at a large international card payment scheme for about 15 years in a variety of roles on both the issuing and acquiring side. It was varied. I included seeing and approving every card design issued across Europe, working in product development, and writing about payments, B2B, which is what I continue to do today.
Delightful. So the topic we have at hand today is cash. And cash seems to be this very ubiquitous thing that everyone knows about. Everyone realizes it exists. But can you actually give me a brief overview of its history? What is the history of cash?
Well, I mean, cash has existed for about 3,000 years. Prior to the use of coins, the ancient Chinese used to use bronze, jade, and shells. It's always served as a medium of exchange, although people probably wouldn't talk about the textbook functions of money, you know, medium of exchange, store of value, and unit of account. But it's been around for thousands of years and continues to be attractive because many of its properties are still required. I mean, it's a two-party transaction with no one else involved. It's person to person, it's pocket to pocket. There are no witnesses, no transaction fees, concepts of a chargeback. It clears instantly. It's familiar, tangible, simple. It's irrevocable. And generally, it meets people's needs. It fits their beliefs, particularly around being inclusive and private. And of course, it's obviously always offline, so it can't be hacked or run out of battery.
Right, and privacy is obviously a really important issue right now with the burgeoning bitcoins and with Facebook announcing recently that they're going to start their own quasi-cryptocurrency. But so it's been a staple of civilization and also pre-civilization, but how has cash been doing recently?
Well, I'd say cash is in pretty rude health. Reports of the death of cash, I think, are exaggerated. I mean, nearly 80% of payments at point of sale across the 19 countries in the Eurozone are made in cash. And that's according to a European Central Bank study from 2017. 54% of the value of all retail payments are in cash across the Eurozone. Obviously, there are significant differences between countries, but it's still a very prevalent payment method. Also, I'd say that cash in circulation is rising. The US Federal Reserve has said that there's $1.7 trillion worth of notes in circulation, and that was at the end of January of this year. So that's just over $5,000 for every person in the US. So we're in a strange situation that while there are ever more digital ways to pay, the demand for physical cash has never been higher. And this is not just in the US, it's across other developed economies as well. Australia, Canada, the Eurozone, the UK, they've all seen a rise in cash in circulation over the last decade or so, which really begs the question, where is all this cash?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really fascinating. As you said, like we have all these new digital ways of paying for goods, but there's this constant rise in cash. So yeah, where is this cash going? You found some interesting data about how much cash people actually carry in their wallets.
Yes, that's right. I mean, some of the cash in circulation is in people's wallets, which of course is a key determinant of their usage of cash. The average European consumer carried around 65 euros in cash in their wallet in 2016. And this is, again, according to the ECB study. But as we know, averages hide a lot. Cash on hand differs between countries. In Germany, for example, the figure was much higher at 103 euro. Luxembourg's also up there, 102 euro. Austria, 89. And at the other end of the scale, we've got the Portuguese with 29, the French with 32, and so forth. So it differs between countries how much cash people carry on them, but also within countries. I think it's probably fair to say that although the German figure of 103 euros seems high, there will be those that carry more than that as well as those that carry less.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest shocks to me coming from the US and moving to Germany was that in Germany, credit cards and debit cards are accepted almost nowhere. And so if you want to go out to a bar or go out to lunch, you always have to carry cash with you or otherwise you can't survive. So while it's usual to pay for things in person with cash, you can also pay for goods online with cash in certain countries. And in PPRO's Almanac, we have about 70 or so. What is the appeal about buying goods online with cash if it's slower than a card?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Niall. I mean, online cash, as it were, is slower than card. But the appeal is that it works for those that don't have a card or a bank account, or those that simply prefer not to disclose their card or bank details online. The process is a bit more involved. I mean, during the online checkout process, the customer selects a cash-based payment type, such as Boleto Bancario in Brazil, OXXO in Mexico, Kiwi in Russia, which then generates a barcode or unique reference number to identify their payment. They then take this into a retailer, often a corner shop or a convenience store, where they can pay in cash over the counter or by some other means in some cases. And once the payment is confirmed to the merchant, the goods are shipped to the user or their account is credited in the case of a service.
You know, that's really funny. I lived in Brazil, and I actually believe I used Boleto Bancario to buy a bus ticket from where I lived to São Paulo. So I totally forgot about that. But so you mentioned OXXO and Boleto. Is using cash online only popular in South America then?
No. Cash online is popular in various countries. In South America, it's particularly due to the large unbanked population. However, that isn't the only determinant. There are cultural and convenience factors also. I mean, 98% of people in Japan have a bank account, yet konbini payments, konbini means convenience store in Japanese, are popular locally as there are around 50,000 of these nationwide at which people can make payments for online purchases. It's a similar story in the UK with PayPoint, and Germany with Barzahlen.
Yeah, you know, this seems like there's a niche for cash payments online, but I can't help but being struck by the parallel of people who insist on listening to music on vinyl. Do you think it would be comparable to the people who prefer to pay for cash online with the people who prefer to listen to their music on vinyls?
Well, I think that the comparison with vinyl is a good one. In actual fact, vinyl accounted for nearly 14% of all physical sales last year, which is approximately the same percentage of cash used in Sweden, quite randomly. There are also those who consume music exclusively on vinyl. They buy vinyl records and have never stopped doing so. There are those who might not buy as much vinyl as they used to, but enjoy listening to music in a variety of formats, depending on the circumstances. And then there are those who just don't have anything to do with vinyl. I hope I haven't lost you, Niall, or our listeners by extrapolating your metaphor about vinyl standing for cash. The point is, though, that some people know, love and use cash exclusively. Others use a mixture of payment methods, including cash, and some don't use it at all. However, while it may differ within and between countries, the cash-paying public represents a significant proportion globally, whether we're talking about online or offline cash.
And how does that compare to the number of digital payment methods that are... Do you see an increase in recent years?
Yes. Well, clearly, the number of digital payment methods and the extent to which they are used is growing. I mean, there's so many great cashless ways to pay. Cards with or without contactless functionality, various flavors of mobile payments, mobile wallets, mobile transfers, mobile contactless, mobile in-app, carrier billing, instant bank transfers, and then good old-fashioned direct debit, which has existed for 40-odd years. I mean, digital payments are growing, and this isn't new news, but I think we have to put it in perspective. Cash still remains the second most frequently used payment method in the UK. It was 28% of payments last year and is forecast to still be used for around 1 in 10 payments in a decade's time.
That's really, really interesting. So why do you think that the British are going to be clinging on to cash?
Well, I mean, 1.3 million people in the UK don't have a bank account, and 2.2 million mainly use cash to pay. They're not necessarily unwilling or unable to use other payment methods. 9 out of 10 of them have a debit card they could use if they chose. The majority also use other payments to settle regular bills. They just prefer to pay in cash. And this is a theme. User prefers. This recurs along with the fact that digital products may not yet meet their needs.
Very, very interesting. Let's touch base really quickly with the country that brought us Spotify and streaming music and has just about killed physical audio. It's Sweden. Sweden has really been this testbed in the West of how a cashless society works. They've cut the amount of cash in circulation in half, and only 14% of respondents to the Swedish Central Bank say that they used cash in their last purchase. So what is Sweden actually like? You know, Sweden famously decided to switch the side of the road they're driving on overnight. But that couldn't have been possible in this case with a cashless society. So how did they develop this cashless society so quickly?
I guess that Sweden's journey towards being cashless or less cash is similar to the Ernest Hemingway quote, "How did you go bankrupt?" said one character to another in one of his novels. "Two ways," he replied, "gradually, then suddenly." According to a deputy governor from the Riksbank, the Swedish Central Bank, who spoke recently at an RBR conference, this movement towards cashless has been going on for some time, the last two decades at least, with things starting to change rapidly about 10 years ago. Banks have made concerted efforts to promote cashless payments, particularly cards and gyro for security reasons. This was mostly due to the number of bank robberies during the 1970s. The banks agreed bilateral interchange fees for cards. Cards were issued to customers for free. A good acceptance network was developed. Acceptance being the other side of the coin to issuance, as it were. And Swedes understood that payment is a two-sided market. There has to be issuance and acceptance together, a means to pay as well as places that accept and welcome that payment. You need a win-win proposition and critical mass on both sides.
So again, this goes back to consensus building between the banks.
Yes, definitely. It sounds like a cliche, you know, the Swedish consensus-orientated way of doing business. But the banks really did work together to develop common infrastructure rather than individual solutions to move the entire market and grow the size of the pie rather than trying to secure their individual piece of it. You can see that today with Bankomat. It's been the debit brand in Sweden for years. It's also the ATM pooling company. jointly owned by the five largest Swedish banks, who have in effect ceded all control for running their ATMs to Bankomat.
So that's true for the physical cash then, but is there a parallel again or an example for the e-wallet?
Yes, I mean, the Swedish banks again have cooperated to create Swish, which is a mobile wallet which links the user's mobile phone to their bank account. And so users can make P2P money transfers and pay in stores. They can pay online and in-app with Swish. And once again, the banks have got behind one brand locally, which has great recognition, so much so that Swish has even become a verb in Swedish. And it's taken off. I mean, there are 7 million private users of Swish in Sweden, and their population is only 10 million. So 70% of the population of Sweden are using this and made, for private users, 31 million payments in May alone. So, you know, it's not only good for them locally, it's also set the bar pretty high for any other international like P2P mobile payment systems who may or may not wish to come to Sweden. Because why would a Swedish consumer deinstall Swish in favor of another mobile payment method? There's such a critical mass. The user experience is good. It's become a payment habit.
Now, this to me sounds great. You also have something similar in the US with Venmo, which I cannot use anymore because I do not have an American credit card or bank account. But just the idea of having this e-wallet, I mean, you don't have to deal with ATM fees. You don't have to lose money in the washing machine anymore. But how has this been viewed in Sweden?
Well, by and large, mostly positive. People are generally not looking for a new way to pay, except in the Nordics. The people there are open to new technologies and innovation. You know, things take off and they take off quickly as a result. However, there are some who feel that Sweden is moving too far, too fast on the journey to less cash, which is leaving people behind. There wasn't an explicit master plan to eliminate cash. It sort of just happened gradually, then suddenly. To quote the deputy governor of the Riksbank again, I mean, the road to cashlessness was not an active choice by anyone in Sweden, he said. It happened more or less by accident. Banks stopped accepting cash deposits, which meant that local businesses couldn't bank their cash takings. As a result, more and more businesses stopped accepting cash. And as you might expect from someone who worked on the acquiring side of a card scheme for many years, you know, without acceptance, you're not going to get usage. It's not about pushing on the issuer side, namely providing the cash. If you don't have anywhere to spend it, it's pointless. So much so that when hospitals in Sweden announced they were no longer taking cash, it prompted a national outcry. I mean, people feel strongly about monopoly suppliers, councils, hospitals, and so on, accepting the payment methods that the population as a whole uses. And that means cash as well. So broadly, there's a concern in Sweden and outside that once the cash infrastructure is dismantled, reinstating it becomes very difficult. And that's where Sweden is right now.
So let's dig in into the downsides of cashless payments. Why should people be a little bit skeptical about them?
Well, I suppose the first most important reason is because cashless payments don't include everyone. So there's a financial inclusion angle here. I mean, the biggest reason that people still need cash is because they might not have a lot of money. If you're on a low income or a fluctuating income, digital payments can come out of your account when you're not expecting them or when you don't have the funds to hand. So those on low incomes often budget with cash to avoid going into debt, even though they may end up paying more for essential goods and services. The so-called poverty premium in the UK can be up to £1,200 a year, according to some estimates. And this comes about as a result of people having to use prepaid utility meters or not pay by the cheapest billing method or be able to access the cheapest tariffs. They may have to pay extra to receive their bills on paper because they don't have internet access. So the recent Access to Cash review found that if you earn less than £10,000 in the UK, you are 14 times more likely to depend on cash than if you earn over £30,000 a year. So, you know, it's back to what I said earlier, digital products don't yet meet everyone's needs, and it's a matter of making digital work for everyone. I mean, that's the situation in the UK around financial inclusion. But what's it like in the US and Germany, Niall, two of the countries you're familiar with?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. This is something that I think is a fairly universal problem in the Western economies, is that the most vulnerable in society simply don't have access to pay for goods without cash. They have to have a mobile phone and most likely a bank account as well to make this work. And what's really a problem here is that the population is generally not white. It's usually minorities. In the US, 6.5% of the population is unbanked. And 70% of this group uses cash on a day-to-day basis. But I mean, compared to the population in general, it's 30%. And this is also something that you see in Germany, where those making less than 1,500 per month are again more likely to use cash than those making 3,000 per month.
There's the digital resilience, which covers both technical glitches and hacking. I mean, cash plays quite an important role as a contingency in the digital future. If your phone dies or the internet goes down, you might not be able to pay for goods. Similarly, systems go down. I mean, Visa had an outage in Europe last year and consumers couldn't pay for goods at all, leaving many without other means of payment. Then there are attacks on the financial system as critical national infrastructure. Sweden is so concerned about this that they leafleted every home last year with something akin to the nuclear warnings from the 1980s. It advised householders to keep cash in small denominations to hand. So as we move more and more towards a cashless or less cash society, we have to make sure that we have a digital infrastructure in place that has redundancy and resilience built in. There are other downsides, of course, privacy, security, and the psychological factors, in that the act of parting with cash is a powerful one and can curb people's spending habits. But the main ones, the downsides, if you like, are around digital products not meeting everyone's needs, leading to financial exclusion and digital resilience.
Delightful. Joyreen, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your expertise, and I hope you come back whenever you're free.
Oh, thank you, Niall. Thanks for having me as a guest on the PPRO podcast today.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you're enjoying it, make sure to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe on the podcatcher of your choice. If you'd like to stay up to date with PPRO, make sure to follow PPRO on social media at PPRO_payments. And if there are any news stories that you think we missed, make sure to send an email to podcast@ppro.com. The PPRO podcast only sounds good because of Andre Ratke. All right, until next time.